Welcome to Local Motion on KVNF, our weekly public affairs program. I'm Jody Peterson. We all take for granted that when we turn on our household taps, we receive an endless supply of clean drinking water. But what if you turned on your kitchen faucet one day, and instead of this, you heard this? That happened to water users in the Paoni area this past February. For a week, the water was shut off due to a combination of drought and leaky infrastructure. In this edition of Local Motion, we'll take a look back at the Paoni water crisis and a look forward at what the town is considering to avert similar problems in the future. And we'll discuss the big picture, too, the ways in which a changing climate threatens the water supplies we all rely on. First, here's KVNF's Luke Runyon with a report on the February shutoff.
Ken Knight unfurls a map in his office in downtown Paonia.
This is the town, in surrounded in yellow. Everything in pink is where we sell water to.
We're looking at a sprawling network of colored lines showing where water pipes crisscross this agricultural valley. Knight is the town administrator, meaning he's in charge of making sure its water system works. And earlier this year, it didn't.
If we had had only one of the things happen at each time, we would not have had a crisis. We had all three things happen and we had a crisis.
It started on Valentine's Day. A 2 million gallon tank that stores Paonia's drinking water was dropping fast. No one knew why, and as water pressure went down, a boil order went into effect. A few days later, they found the leak, a pipe leading to a fire hydrant near the banks of the river that flows through town.
And the water was going straight through the river rock into the river, so it was not boiling to the surface.
They patched things up, but it was just the beginning of the problem. Other big leaks were draining the tank too. And because of last year's drought, the mountain springs feeding the tank were running extremely low.
And when the water got to 2 feet, I said, okay, we're shutting off.
That meant for a week, there was no water at all for most of the town's 1,600 customers.
Yeah.
Downtown Paonia is lined with brightly colored shops and restaurants to cater to farm-to-table tourists. Without water, many had to temporarily shut down. Tyler Timbrell manages Living Farm Cafe.
I'd say we probably lost about $500 or $600 $1,200 days in our off-season.
That would have been enough money to cover a month's worth of their utilities. Servers and cooks who count on hours and tips were told to stay home.
We kind of just put the whole town behind it, feels like.
People who live and work in town weren't the only ones affected. Hundreds of rural residents were among the first to get cut off.
We're kind of spoiled here in the 2019.
David Herz lives on a farm just outside Paonia. He and his wife took showers at friends' houses in town. He says turning on your faucet and having nothing come out is unsettling.
It was incredible, the kind of psychic effect it had on the community.
He says the incident revealed the sorry shape of Paonia's water system and the town's shortcomings in dealing with a crisis.
These infrastructure costs are going to go up. I expect that. It's the right thing to do at this point.
I recently spoke further with Ken Knight, Paonia Town Administrator, about the water system and steps that the town could take toward improving the reliability of the water supply.
Yes, the town water system essentially consists of multiple springs, but we get our primary water from about 7 of them. They feed into 2 water treatment plants. The town has surplus processing capacity with those 2 plants, far more than we need for the customers that we have in the system and the consecutive water companies that we provide water to. Our processing is not the issue.
So how many water taps are there that the town of Paonia serves?
Roughly between 1,700 and 2,000 water taps. We tend to provide around 80,000 gallons a day. That's what we process. Some of that water goes into backwash, cleaning the systems, et cetera, et cetera. And actually, we're working on spreadsheets right now to start talking about the amount of water, raw water delivered, the amount of water processed, the amount of water spilled, and the amount of water billed. And we're putting those spreadsheets together. They're going to be provided to the Board of Trustees, and this is going to be a monthly report that we will now be generating.
What will be done with that information? How will it be used?
We need to put together a long-term program. We have a very good water study from 2000, but of course a lot of the issues in that water study have already been dealt with as far as water processing. What has not been dealt with is raw water storage that 2000 report did discuss.
Paonia's long-term approach then is primarily going to be focused on increasing raw water storage?
Raw water storage is our primary concern right now. Right now, I have raw water spilling into the North Fork of the Gunnison and all of the tributaries that we spill into, probably 10 times more than we're processing. Our problem is not raw water. Our problem is raw water 24/7, 12, 365. In February, most of that water that we're spilling right now was ice. We weren't getting the same kind of water into the plants the way we are right now. We need to make sure that we have enough of that raw water stored that when those springs go through their month and a half of fairly low levels during a cold winter with a lot of snow, when that water is going to be locked up into ice, that we still have the water to provide to the citizens of our system.
So what has happened to the spring flow after drought years? You know, 2018 was a pretty severe drought year. Did that also contribute to the low spring flow over the winter?
We believe so. The fact of the matter is that according to the state and even according to our records, drought tends to follow about 18 months. That's when we really start seeing it. This spring has simply been so wet. We're not sure if we're going to see a reduction again this winter the way we saw last winter because we've had so much water.
Is it important to continue trying to conserve water and being conscious of water use?
Absolutely. The average household uses about 90 gallons a day in Paonia. In Colorado, they use between 125 and 130 gallons a day. So Paonia has always been a fairly conservative community when it comes to conservation. Part of that is because so many of our people are on ditch water for irrigation. But one of the things we're looking at is, one, updating our drought contingency plans, looking at water conservation plans. And the one area where we are looking at the usage rate is not for the smaller user, it's for the larger user to do some conservation incentives by making the higher user pay somewhat more above a certain amount of gallons. There's a limit to what we can and what we really want to do to people. We don't want to punish people, but we need to be smart. And we have been encouraging conservation. And compared to past years, we are right now using less water than we have in most Mays and Junes. Now, that's probably because of how wet it's been. There hasn't been anybody really doing irrigation out of potable water. I would encourage nobody to do irrigation out of potable water myself, but if you're not a member of a ditch district and everything else and you happen to like the green grass, then you have to find ways to water it. I just don't think that's the highest and best use of water is ornamental shrubs.
So if the town is considering raw water storage, what are some of the options for that and where does the funding come from?
Right now, we're talking to two different reservoirs. The town had talked to Lone Cabin back in the aughts about expanding their reservoir. The problem with the Lone Cabin reservoir is that we have very few of our springs that we can gravity water to. We would have to pump water to it. So that's an issue. The other reservoir is the Rober Reservoir, which were very generous during the water crisis, and we were able to pump water out of that reservoir. And Rober also has the great advantage is that we can get a lot of spring water into Rober. So the question would be is to raise the level of Rober to make sure that the dam can handle it. So these are feasibility studies that we're definitely going to be talking about. I have talked to the USDA. It's a possibility that based upon the Delta County emergency designation in February and the governor's designation of an emergency that allowed us to activate the Southwest incident management team for our water crisis, that I can go to USDA and say, okay, we need some emergency funding for raw water storage. And part of that would come in as grant and not loan, because it'd be emergency. We've just going to have to write the grants. So where the money's going to come from, would be definitely we'll be looking at USDA. We'll also be looking at the state water revolving loan fund. But again, anytime I talk about loan, it means we're looking at water rates, we're looking at bonds, at revenue bonds, which means we have to have rates that will cover those bonds. That means rate increases. So, of course, the board is always going to be looking for grants before they look for loans. But that's part of this whole process. It's part of what we're going to be talking about is where do we go from here? What are our steps that we need to take? I'm not going to tell you that we have all the answers right now. The after-action report that we got from the multi-agency team has some very strong recommendations in it. And so we're going to be looking at all of those and trying to figure out what we can implement. And the other thing we really have to look at is, based upon the number of water taps that we have outstanding that aren't being used, what is the growth potential in our system? Arch Coal has about 316, but we do have an additional 80 taps out there that's outside of Arch Coal. There are about 400 taps that have been sold that have never been developed.
And what if all those taps came online and people expected to be served water?
I can do it today. I don't know if I can do it next February. That's my simple answer right now.
And I see that there have been some growth proposals, people considering some pretty major expansion along Samuel Wade Road and other places for the future of the town. Does it make sense to do that before we have more water storage?
As of right now, we are not under a moratorium. And as of right now, if people meet the criteria, it goes through Planning Commission and Board of Trustee approval, then we'll be selling water taps. That's until there is a decision made above my pay grade not to sell water taps, we will be selling water taps. One of the realities is that during the water crisis, we did lose raw water due to a pressure relief valve. So if we had had that raw water, would we have had the emergency? We're not sure, because the two leaks in town were so large, and then losing some raw water capacity, it created the crisis. If we didn't have all three of those things happening at the same time, would we have had the same crisis? And that's another thing that I really need a water engineer in, to look at the entire system, to start at the springs and go to the very last water tap on the last water company. And we need a really good analysis of the entire system.
What are the other priorities?
What we need to be able to do is we need to be able to truly segregate the system and say, okay, if I have a limited amount of water, who gets it? What's the priority? Are the priorities the schools? Are the priorities the nursing home? Is the priorities the health clinic, downtown commercial? We need to be able to segregate the system, so if we do have a crisis, or if we have a water leak in one of those areas, we can, boom, segregate it and still provide water to the rest of the system. We need water engineers to really do the analysis of the system and say, okay, in order to accomplish your goals and to maintain public safety and to maintain the greatest number of people having water at any one time, this is what you need to do.
The town has realized for a long time that something will need to be done about the water system. You know, there was a feasibility study in 1999. Was any action ever taken as a result of that?
To a degree. Some of the production capacity that we've increased as far as treatment of the water, that has been done. One of the interesting things, and this is where we're digging down right now as a staff, is looking at their growth projections and to see how accurate they were. Because they did do a 10, 20, 30, 40-year plan on what our growth projections were. And we need to look to see, okay, we're 20 years after that. Where are we on their growth projections? How close was it? Can we utilize any of them, or do we need to have those revisited by this new study that we clearly want done? The area that we have not done anything on based upon that commission study was raw water. And until this past February, it was never an issue. And now it all of a sudden has become the greatest issue.
So how does climate change play into all of this? As projections show that snowpack will continue to diminish across the state, how might that affect our water supply? Is there a plan B if there's no longer sufficient recharge to the springs? What happens then?
I don't know. One of the things, the town does not receive any water from the North Fork, does not receive any water from Pioneer Reservoir. The only rights we have are all those springs along Mount Lamborn. This year, roughly 141% snowpack. I can't tell you at what point 80% of traditional snowpack, we're not getting the recharge, 70%. I don't have the answer to that. So that's one of the things that we, when I say we need to do a complete analysis of the system from the spring headwaters all the way to the last faucet that can get turned on the system, that's got to be part of the projections. We've got to look at spring production. Are there ways for us to increase production out of those springs? Is there groundwater or surface water that we can get water rights to? Those are all questions we need answers to, or we at least start needing to have the conversation on getting water rights, etc. Nobody in municipal government has the slightest idea on how we're going to deal with that. But I do know this. Water is the oil of the 21st century. We don't respect water enough. We need to treat water like the precious resource it is. The number of people who come in will not think a thing about spending $3.50 for a gallon of gas, will complain mightily over spending 5 cents more for 1,000 gallons of water. Water, both for drinking water and for treatment as far as sewage, is an expensive process, and everybody thinks all I have to do is turn on the tap and I have water, and it's not that easy. Most people don't understand how expensive and what a tremendously valuable resource it really is. One of the things I think people also aren't really thinking about is the recovery of our economy in this area. It took a huge hit, as everybody knows, when the two coal mines closed. But a lot of the recovery in this area is the agriculture in this area. And if we don't have irrigation for the agriculture, this is a semi-arid climate. If we lose that industry on top of what we've already lost, if these new wineries that are opening are suddenly not going to be able to irrigate, if the orchards aren't able to get enough water, if we do see a reduction in the water from Paonia Dam and for these ditch companies, then there goes another segment of our economy that is really helping this area recover. What a resource the North Fork Valley is. The North Fork Valley doesn't have water. It's not a resource.
That was Ken Knight, Paonia Town Administrator. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Jody Peterson, and this week we're discussing water supplies on the Western Slope, especially for Paonia, which lost water for a week this past winter. Next, we'll hear from Thomas Wills, editor and publisher of the North Fork Merchant Herald since 1996, who also served on the Hotchkiss Town Council for 16 years. Wills has done extensive research into the history of the water systems of both Paonia and Hotchkiss.
The history of Paonia's water is basically dry years. People get worried about if they have enough water or not. And this has gone on for a really long time. The last time I found, just in my research back, was in the 1970s. And they had a bad drought in the 1970s, and they had the same sort of worries. They would worry about it when they were short on water, and then they wouldn't worry about it when they had wet years. In the dry West where we live, which we don't really realize that sometimes, that's what we're going to have to look at. And things like, you know, bluegrass lawns with no weeds in them and that sort of thing. And I mean, really need to look at conservation is probably one of the bigger things.
How can municipalities best accomplish that goal of reducing water use?
And the most effective thing that we found in Hotchkiss, and I'm sure it's probably true for a lot of other small communities, is price. You charge people more money for water, they use less water. And unfortunately, it makes it so it's hard for people, if they don't have access to irrigation water, to water, to have a garden or keep their lawn nice or something like that if you're lower income. So there's, it's a balance of trying to figure out how to get people to use less water. You can charge them more money. That seems to slow people down. If you notice, there's a lot more sprinkler systems. People are putting in a lot more drip irrigation on farms. And in other words, farmers are figuring out how to do the same amount of farming and sometimes more farming with less water. So farmers are actually kind of setting a good example around here, I think. And we have problems too. I mean, Hotchkiss has problems. Hotchkiss is the only system, pretty much the only big water system in the valley that's been surface water, treated surface water right from the beginning. We get our water from LaRue Creek. It's stored in about a dozen little reservoirs up in the, and our problem is we're looking at, during dry years, just getting water into our system sometimes is a challenge. We have to pile rocks in the creek to get it high enough, to get it into the ditch, to get it out of the, to deliver it to our system. The other challenges are we're looking at the idea, what if we had wildfires? Wildfires are another thing that can happen that are becoming more common and severe due to climate change. And if we had a wildfire between our takeout and the reservoirs, it could knock our water system out for weeks or months.
Just because of all the silt washing into the system?
It would totally pollute the water and be full of all kinds of stuff, and it would be almost impossible to treat.
The Paoni water system is vulnerable to the same thing, having all of those springs that are at the base of Mount Lamborn.
Not quite so much, just because they're springs, you know, but the delivery systems, then they have plastic pipe and all kinds of things at the springs that definitely could, if there was fire there, they could have all kinds of problems, yeah.
Was Hotchkiss more forward-looking in acquiring these additional water sources?
We just weren't in close proximity to springs, probably. That's probably the truth of it. We had, LaRue Creek was fairly close. It just comes down right outside of town. And at the beginning, people probably just went, there's the creek right there. And then they figured out the creek didn't really run year-round very well. And so they built all these reservoirs up. I mean, the most important thing, of course, is that every town, every water system in the valley is going to have to look at adaptation to climate change and the trend towards more drought and just say, plan for that, you know. Don't just look at this year and go, whoa, look at all the water we got. And, I mean, this year is an anomaly. I mean, it's a strange year, and it's not a harbinger of great times to come or anything like that.
It's not the
nice
norm.
Green period in between these other. It's more normal to have dry years than it is to have years like this. So we should enjoy it while we can. But the time to do your planning is when you're not faced with a crisis, you know. So you really need to plan during better times for worse times.
And that was Thomas Wills, editor and publisher of the North Fork Merchant Herald. Now that we've gotten a good understanding of some of the problems that led to the Paonia water crisis, we'll hear from Bill Bruner, who served on the Paonia Town Council in the late 90s and again in 2016 and 2017. Bruner describes his idea for improving the way the town manages its water.
My own suggestion to make things better is that there should be a new organizational structure around the way the water system is managed. I think there should be a board established that's elected from people at large who depend on Paonia's water. See, the town's water system is an enterprise fund. It's a standalone business. And by law, by Colorado law, there is a board designated to administer that water system. And by town ordinance, that board is the town council. But it doesn't have to be. It could be designated as a board of, name the number of people, 5 people elected at large from the area served by Paonia Water. And they could have the responsibility for making decisions about, you know, when to map it, how many taps to sell. Quite frankly, I think the town has blown it. I think their inattention to this shows that we need to try something else. And I strongly suggest this new structure for a water board. There'd be a lot of details that would have to be worked out, but I think it's quite possible.
So the intention being that it would be a separate board and therefore could be composed of people whose sole responsibility is figuring out how to effectively run the water system.
Exactly.
Instead of dealing with the town council that has responsibility for everything.
Right. And quite frankly, nobody got onto the board thinking about the water system. And in fact, the board is very focused on growth. I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing, but without the legitimate ability to offer the water, I think it's premature to start talking about growth. I think you need to stop. And because, I mean, basically we're planning outages, water outages like we just had.
Definitely, if there's going to be future growth in the town, it's dependent on there being a reliable supply of water.
Where to get more water is it's a big deal. What they need is a seasonal storage, it's called, a reservoir big enough to hold water for 2 or 3 years. And the town's firm yield, I believe, from the engineering reports, is calculated at 625 acre-feet a year.
Yeah, that's correct.
And they recommend a reservoir with 3 or 4 times that capacity.
So are you pursuing a ballot measure for this formation of this water board that you're talking about?
I'm very interested in a ballot measure. I'm not actually doing the paperwork right now. So it's something I hope to see happen. I would help it along. I can't do it myself. And when other people come forward and want help doing it, I'm all there. Like I say, we're all in this together, and I'd really like to see us start acting like it. And I think townspeople need to step up and get ahead of their government and figure out how we're going to straighten this thing out.
That same suggestion that Bill Bruner describes of setting up a separate water board was mentioned by several Paoni residents at a special town council meeting on June 24th. Many said the time is ripe to institute this new structure for water management. The next special meeting on water will be July 15th at Paonia Town Hall. If you're just tuning in, this week on Local Motion, we're talking about water supplies on the Western Slope. To wrap up, I spoke with Benet Duncan, Managing Director of Western Water Assessment at the University of Colorado. That organization works with communities in the Rocky Mountain West to help them manage for climate impacts.
Scientists use climate models to help better understand what might happen in the future. And the models are based really on the physics of the atmosphere and the ocean, and then different potential scenarios of how much of those, you know, heat-trapping greenhouse gases we emit. And so when we look at the climate models, they're consistently showing that temperatures will get hotter in Colorado and really across the world over the next century. What the models don't agree on, though, is precipitation. And so some say that there might be more precipitation in the future, so more rain and snow, and others say that there might be less. But I think an important thing for communities in Colorado to have in mind is that just the warming alone, just those higher temperatures alone, leaves us to expect more drought in the future. If it's hotter, you get more water evaporating from plants, more water evaporating from the ground, more water evaporating from reservoirs. And so that dries us out. And, you know, in addition, those hotter temperatures result in more rain, less snow, reduced snowpacks, earlier peak runoff. You know, we've seen things like that in recent years. And it also can leave soils really dry. So then when we have a wet year after a drought like this year, some of that water actually has to be absorbed back into those extra dry soils, and so less of it ends up in our streams and rivers. So
when we have a year like this where we have cool temperatures and we have a lot of rain and a lot of snowpack, you know, how does that fit into the overall picture of climate change for the region?
The long-term trend is warming. We have been in a long-term drought in Colorado. And so last year was really dry, and dry years happen. And sometimes we've had these long-term droughts where you get a little break of a wet year. So it might be that we, you know, really appreciate all the moisture this year and try to see it as an opportunity to think about how we can reduce our water use and adjust our water systems so that towns can be more resilient to continue to have water. We're getting into a new normal here. And so this year, probably not the start of a long-term cooling.
So in light of those future projections, what should municipalities do in the West? Are there steps that they can be taking to prepare for a hotter, drier future?
A lot of what we suggest communities do is just start to have conversations. One is talk to your local universities and scientists and try to get, you know, updated information to understand what's happening with climate change in your region. And then have conversations across departments within your community. Transportation and planning departments and all of those have a role to play in figuring out how a community can increase its resilience and not be as vulnerable to droughts in the future and to, you know, extreme precipitation in the future. And so having conversations and identifying where you're vulnerable, where your challenges might be, and what your opportunities might be to reduce those impacts in the future.
And that concludes Local Motion. You can find this episode at kvnf.org also. Thanks for tuning in.